All right, 2 o'clock here in the Hang Zone with Dan with Jake on Bud Thursday, but my Friday. And joining us right now on the Buyer's Barricade ticket hotline, she is the CEO of Big Cat Rescue. She's like Julie. She's in the C-suite. She is a big cat activist, rights activist. She was featured in the Netflix documentary Tiger King. She is Carol Baskin. Hi, Carol. We can see you on Zoom.
Hey, all you gorgeous kittens.
There it is. There it is. So, we thought there's a tiger loose in Houston. It went viral. This looks like an insane story. An off-duty deputy pulled a gun on it. Somehow no one was hurt, and somehow they still haven't found the tiger. So we wanted an expert on this matter. We reached out to Carol Baskin. So tell me what you know about the statistic that we hear bandied about. It's been in comedy sets. Are there actually more tigers in captivity in Texas or owned in Texas privately than there are in the wild in the rest of the world? Is that true?
I believe that's true. There's less than 4,000 tigers left in the wild. And the last count that we had of tigers in the U.S. was in 2004, and that was about 5,000 tigers. And Texas and Florida, of course, being two of the worst states when it comes to that. But hundreds of these cubs are pumped out every year since 2004. So there's no telling what that number is now.
So sometimes whenever you see a political disagreement or something that is state by state, red, blue, whatever the case may be, you can sort of understand both sides of it, wherever people fall on this issue or that issue. I don't know that I can fully wrap my head around why the idea of allowing lax laws on owning massive, apex predators in your personally. What is the dispute on why something like the Big Cat Public Safety Act, which I know you're a proponent of, why doesn't that get traction and ultimately get voted on and passed?
Well, I think it will pass this year, but it's because of much more awareness about these issues. And thank you, Texas, for doing that every couple of weeks. But the only reason that we ever hear from lawmakers as to why they oppose the bill is they think that states should have the right to regulate it themselves. And the state of Texas actually went a step further and said, we don't think Texas should regulate this. We think the counties in Texas should regulate this. And so those counties are not equipped to deal with tigers on the loose or how you should properly house one or any of those kinds of issues. So it becomes an issue of these people crossing state lines or crossing county lines. And it's just always a bad thing for the animals involved and for the people that live near them.
Is that why I saw a headline that it just stated that Carol Baskin blaming Greg Abbott and Ted Cruz for this whole situation that's going down in Houston right now?
Well, I had mentioned Ted Cruz and Senator Cornyn and also Senator Rubio and Scott here in Florida as being Republicans who have never signed on to the bill. We've been trying to get this bill passed since 1998. We got a previous version passed in 2003, but the loophole was it still allowed private ownership of big cats, and it didn't stop the cub petting, which is what's driving all of the breeding and dumping into private hands. So our bill now, that will finally close that loophole.
Did the Netflix documentary help you here?
I think it did, because an awful lot of the time when I would go to Congress and say, we have this huge problem with all of these cubs being born and being discarded into pet homes, they were like, that can't be happening in the United States. Nobody does that. Now they know, yeah, there's a lot of it going on.
That's interesting, because I've always been curious about the life of someone whose story and life is told through a medium like a docuseries that you didn't make. You appeared in, but you didn't make it. So would you say that even though it's raised awareness, is that a solid trade-off for you for now having a level of celebrity? And certainly you're aware not everyone a huge fan of yours in the public, but you get the awareness factor and maybe the bill passes now. How do you reconcile all of that?
You know, my family would say they would never have participated if they knew that we were going to be betrayed in this manner. But I still would do it. And I think the reason is, if you can imagine somebody saying those things about your mother or your loved one, you would feel like there was just no way you would ever put up with that again. But it was said about me, and I don't care what people think about me. All I care about is the fact that we are losing tigers in the wild, and they will disappear in the next 5 years or so if we don't stop this cub petting, which is creating a legal smokescreen for all of the illegal activities that are causing us to lose the tiger in the wild. So for me, it was worth it.
How much did your battle with Joe Exotic over the years dominate your life? It just seemed like that was all of both of your lives were about, was him instigating you and you trying to fend him off.
I've never even spoken to him. My husband handled all of the legal, he was using our name, so we had to stop him. We got $1 million judgment against him, so we had to chase him through bankruptcy court. My husband's handled all of that. I have stayed laser focused on ending this problem at its root. And the whole idea that this was some big feud between me and Joe Exotic was just fabricated.
Fabricated by the doc.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a big part of my life. There's a lot of Joe Exotics out there, and I'm after every single one of them, and I will bring every single one of them to justice, but he's just one of them.
Okay, maybe I need to talk to him, although I'm not able to do so, as you know. He's very close to us. He's in Fort Worth. He's in prison in Fort Worth. You're aware of that, right?
Yeah.
But it seemed like you dominated his thoughts. Maybe that's the case.
That was what people told us. People that came from there said that every single day he was screaming my name. But it was really a bizarre obsession because it's not just me. I mean, the whole world is changing their attitude about how we treat exotic animals or animals in general. And we're becoming much more aware of them being sentient beings and our necessity to protect them in the wild. So those things are happening, and people like Joe and the other people you saw in Tiger King are fighting against that trend, but I think they're on the losing end of history there.
So, look, in addition to the Public Safety Act, what are some other things that, like, what's the next step from there? Like, how do you even feel? Obviously, you've worked at sanctuaries, but even that, is that, let's say 15, 20 years from now, is even that something that you could see being phased out? Like, I have this big opinion on our show that horse racing will not be around in 15 years. I have no momentum there right now. But I just wonder what the next step after the votes at the governmental level are.
I think the timeline is much shorter for me to be able to go out of business. And that's my ultimate goal. There shouldn't have to be sanctuaries rescuing animals, exotic animals, from horrible situations. We just shouldn't have horrible situations. And all of these cubs that are being dumped into private ownership, typically they don't even live to be 10 or 12 years old at most of these other facilities. At Big Cat Rescue, we have tigers that are 25 years old. But I think most of the cats that are in private hands will die out over the next 10 years. And even, the ones that are already aged, when I say aged, I mean like already adult. So we're talking like a 5-year horizon, I think, before our sanctuary could just about completely wind down. There will be other sanctuaries that are still taking in animals, but I think they'll start taking in things like bears and wolves and other animals than cats, because the cat problem will have finally been fixed.
This is Carol Baskin, the activist, CEO of Big Cat Rescue. We all got to know you. We all feel like we know you.
Yeah, really, it really dropped Netflix. At the right
you
time of the pandemic. No, I know we don't, but having Tiger King drop right when the pandemic started, I feel like it was either good or really bad for you.
It was a perfect storm. For all the time that you would have people casting so much hatred toward you, the best thing was that we were all locked in our rooms during that period of time.
Did you make any money off of that documentary?
No. Oh. We always work with documentary producers, and we had worked with several others during the same 5 years that we worked with theirs, and we never asked for any money because they told us they were working on a blackfish for Big Cats that would finally expose all of the abuse and show people the wretched conditions these animals live in. And instead, everybody got entertained, but at least they learned that there was a problem, so I think it was worthwhile. But,
yeah, I'd like to know. I don't think Netflix ever releases this info, but I'd like to know where that ranks amongst their all-time watched, because like you said, the perfect storm. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic, and then it became the most viral, or whatever. It reminded you of the Cheers finale or something that everybody watched back in the day, Like, everybody watched Tiger King.
Who shot JR? Yeah.
Yeah.
There were a few of those along the way.
And so it certainly elevated your fame. to the sense that we understand you've started some kind of a cat crypto coin, and I would imagine something like that would not have been available for you to do if that documentary never dropped.
Actually, I've been very interested in virtual reality and augmented reality as a way of zoos remaking themselves, because I see zoos as being the last foothold in abusing big cats. They've been telling everybody for years that the reason they exist is as a ark to protect these animals from extinction. And yet during the 200 years that we've had zoos, the cats, all of the exotic cats, have dropped by 95% or more of the numbers in the wild. So that's not working. And that's why I've been working on all of these different crypto type things. But I've been doing that kind of work since 2012. And I'm really excited about some of the things we're doing there. You're probably right that Rally would not have made me one of their initial 117 coins if it weren't for the name recognition, but I would have gotten into crypto regardless.
And something else that you might not have been a part of if it wasn't for the Netflix documentary is, of course, Dancing with the Stars.
Well, that's for sure. Nobody was ever going to ask me to dance.
So we work with a guy who is the biggest Dancing with the Stars fan possibly ever. You could ask him any season. In fact, let's bring him on right now. His name is Tony. He's a great dude. Tony, welcome to the show. Say hello to Carol.
Hi, Carol. It's a pleasure.
Hi, Tony.
Let me just prove it. This is the way I like to prove it. Tony is my party trick. Tony, let's just go. Carol, give me a number from 1 to 10.
7.
Okay, Tony, season 7, fourth place finisher. Who was it?
Season 7. Let's see. Oh, my gosh, that's a hard one to remember. That's a guy named Cody Lindley. He was a teenage kid, 18 years old. I think he was a Disney kid. Never heard of him before and haven't heard of him since. So that's kind of a tough one. But
who was the top four that year?
Brooke Burke won. Then she became the co-host of the show for 7 seasons. Warren Sapp, the football player, was second, and then Lance Bass, the NSYNC guy, was third.
Are you impressed?
It's incredible.
Are you impressed, Carol?
I am so impressed. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, Tony wanted to ask you a question, so if you wouldn't mind fielding something from Tony.
Sure.
Well, Carol, first let me say I'm a big fan because I've been an animal guy for a long time. I've volunteered at a wildlife center in Texas called Fossil Rim, and we don't have tigers, but we have cheetahs, and we certainly hear the stories, the horrific stories that go on, and it takes a really special person to stand up to those folks and do what you're doing. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I've been to Fossil Rim.
You have?
I have.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Well, I did have a Dancing with the Stars question. You know, I'm a long-term viewer of the show, and it was kind of different last year, obviously, with no Tom Bergeron and no studio audience. I was real curious how you were treated, I guess, as a, you know, a COVID time thing. Were you sequestered in your hotel all the time? Did you take tests? Did you get to mingle with your other contestants when you were in the ballroom? What was it like dancing in a huge ballroom with no people? Just curious about how the whole experience was for you.
The COVID tests were really horrible, and we had to take them every day during the week, and it was when, you know, you had to stick that thing up into your brain, and we did have to live sequestered. And so, as you know, a lot of the dance pros are married to each other, and so they had to actually be living separate from each other during that period of time as well. So when I got scratched from Dancing with the Stars, I think me and Pasha were like the two happiest people in the world, because he got to go back to his wife and I got to go back to my husband in Florida. But it was a lot of testing. And it was the first time in my life that I had a reason to look forward to the weekend, because I've always worked 7 days a week. And on the weekend, we didn't have to be tested. And so it was like I was living for the weekend. And then they had to do so much cleaning of each one of the ballrooms in between the dancers, so that there was no chance of spreading it by touch, because we didn't know back then that that wasn't as big a reason for spreading it. And as a result, they were only giving us a couple of hours of training a day. And so I would take Pasha, my dance pro, Pasha Pashko, I'd take them doing my dance steps, and then I'd play it on the TV back at my hotel room, or it was like a condo that they rented for me. and I play it, and I would dance until my feet were bleeding. I moved all the furniture out of the room and everything, so that, because I wanted to stay it in as long as I could to get the message out about the cats every week. But as you know, I was scratched after the third one.
Yeah, and those three dances you did, they were all, you know, cat-based themed or whatever. Did you have any input into the dance or the, the song and the costumes, or was that all producer-driven saying, do this for us?
They had asked me for all of my favorite songs, which, of course, were all cat songs, but I didn't pick which ones they did or which dances, and I had never danced a step in my life, so I didn't know anything about any of the dances. It didn't matter what they were asking me to do. It was totally foreign. But as far as the costumes went, it was really fun because everybody was afraid of me because of who I was portrayed to be in Tiger King. And so the ladies in wardrobe were like, you know, we really don't want to upset you, but would you mind if we did? And I was like, you can do anything you want. I am game for whatever you were doing. And they said I was the most fun person to dress they ever had because they just went wild, as you saw.
Well, that costume for the Lion King dance was amazing. Both of you and Pasha, incredible.
Oh, that took hours to get that makeup into that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, hey, one other thing is Pasha is cool in person as he appears on air. He's a newer pro, and I don't know too much about him, but he's already one of my favorite choreographers. Seems like a really cool guy.
Everybody there calls him Buddha because he is just so zen. And I told him, you know, it's amazing that you have not just completely lost your mind with me stepping all over him and crashing into him and just, you know, being such a horrible student. But he works with children, and so he was capable of dealing with me and my inabilities.
Thanks, Tony.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're letting you go now. It's about time.
Thank you, Carol. It was a blast.
Thanks, man.
See you, Tony. Bye, Tony.
He was surprised that we have a time limit here, Carol. But we do.
Can we ask you for one more thing? I know we've already taken a lot of your time. It is what we call our wacky radio liner, where you simply identify yourself and say, I never listen to Dan and Jake on the Ticket.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol Baskin, and I never listen to Dan and Jake on the Ticket.
Thank you so much.
What a pro.
Appreciate you. Good luck with the bill.
Thank you. Goodbye.
2:15, let's do some math to the end of the show next on the Ticket.